Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mallow, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 157, being recorded on the 14th of December, 2016, with special guest Matt Watson of Stackify. I'm Sujit, and on Skype with me, I have Kale, Evan, and our special guest, Matt. Now, before we give Matt a chance to introduce himself, I think the first thing I'd like to find out is, and I know it's one of the items that came up in the news today, this week for Azure, is the release of the blockchain in India, and one of our guests happened to be in India releasing the blockchain there. So how was your trip, Kale?
It was very good. So we had the first ever blockchain summit there. In India, it was in New Delhi. So that was last Tuesday. And about 120 people there from partners, SIs, customers, whatnot. And, we had some partners from the blockchain space that I work with, as well as us. And it was just good to get out in front of them to talk about what Microsoft's doing in the blockchain space and get people excited about that. So I think it was really good. And obviously then traveled around. I went down to Mumbai to meet with some other partners as well while I was in the area. So it was fun.
That's great. Real nice that you could be part of that whole release. So, in other news from last week, Kale, you put some items in the show notes. Anything that you want to touch upon?
Yeah, one was around this training and discounted certifications for Azure. So there's some new discounts out there. If anybody's out there in the industry looking to kind of get certified on this stuff, there's three training offers for free access, I guess, to some online stuff. And we'll put the links out there. So take advantage of that if you're looking to kind of get some creds behind the cloud.
Okay. Yeah, I saw this early in the week, and I think Scott Guthrie tweeted about it as well. So so this is to actually get those 7534 style certifications. Is that what it's for?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of them, right? There's like infrastructure. There's one that's more tailored towards developers.
Yeah.
And I think there's another one on architecture.
Right, that's the 534. Yeah. Okay, that's great. I mean, that's what I think most of us have. Which one, Evan? Which certification do you have?
I've got the 533 and 534, so the infrastructure and the architecture. Yeah, I had to admit to myself that the developer certification was really kind of out of my wheelhouse these days. I've been away from that space too long, and it was not going to be a pretty thing. So, I decided that wasn't a good idea.
Okay, yeah, I did the 534, and Kale, I think you did 534 as well, right?
Yep.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I actually thought, I was talking to somebody the other day, and, they were saying, hey, which, I'm trying to learn this stuff, and the way they wanted to learn was go take a certification. I was really recommending they take 534. I thought that was a pretty good exam as far as kind of laying out why you would use service A versus service B in this scenario, right? Yeah. Much less focused on how do I resize a SQLDB. Right, and much more focused on when I use IaaS versus web apps versus cloud service. So I thought that was a good. I'm not generally a certification fan, but I actually thought that was a pretty good one.
Yeah, and I think these training sessions are good to to take advantage of before you try to attempt one of those exams. I know you could do you could probably take them again if you have to, but it's good to at least get some grounding before you do the exam. So this is a good one.
Absolutely.
What about you, Evan? Anything in there that you like from the show notes?
You guys know me. I mean, just like Kale's always gravitating towards blockchain, I always gravitate towards SQL. The SQL Query Store, right, which is this it's kind of the grown up SQL DMVs, but it tracks your queries and it tracks when queries all of a sudden become more intensive or more resource intensive. Query store is now turned on by default. Right? And I never really understood why it wasn't in the first place, but we finally made the decision that, like, hey, this is such a powerful utility, and everybody always wants it after the fact. So let's not even put ourselves in the situation of, hey, I really wanted that yesterday, but I didn't turn it on until this morning, and just turn it on by default.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like a black box, like, type thing. So that as you're running queries, it's basically keeping the stats or something of.
Yeah. So, like, you know, SQL Server's always had the dynamic management views, or not always, but since, you know, 2005. And those you can go in and query. Since restart, you can go query, you know, these are the queries that were run, these are the query plans, you know, these are the kind of, you know, CPU or IO resources those queries have consumed. Query store takes it kind of one step further, and it actually is able to show you that, hey, you know, on this day last week, your query all of a sudden started using more resources.
That's
awesome.
Know,
more IO. And so you can go say, oh, wait a minute, we made a query. Oh, yeah, we tweaked the query that day. Yeah, that's definitely what went on. I mean, just not, it's a similar stuff to what you can find with the DMVs, but it kind of layers on a set of functionality on top that makes it easier to kind of see those insights.
Yep. That's a good one. And then I like the one on the public beta for Docker for Azure.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Which was an interesting one. And when I first read this, I'm like, wait a minute, I thought we already had Docker in Azure. But there's a subtle difference over here. I think in what we've currently have out there is just, you know, the VMs, Linux or Windows VMs running Docker, and then, you know, traditionally just like you would do it on your own infrastructure on premises. But what this is actually a version of Docker that's been tweaked for Azure. It takes advantage of the Azure infrastructure, or the ARM infrastructure, and therefore it has a deeper integration into the cloud framework. They released one for AWS last week, and then this week they released it for Azure. And so I think this is the real Docker in the cloud offering that Microsoft and AWS are coming out with.
So this isn't quite a Docker service. This is you deploying your own VMs that allow you to do the Docker service, right? This isn't. It's kind of like Service Fabric, where I run Service Fabric on a bunch of VMs, versus the Service Fabric service, where I just kind of submit my actors, right? This is the same, where I'm spinning up my VMs, and now I'm...
No, there's no VMs to spin. This is like a true Docker natively running on Azure.
Okay, so that's kind of what I was asking. So it is the native service. I don't know anything about what's going on underneath.
Right.
Cool.
Yes, you know, you can do the swarming and things like that, like you traditionally do, but, you know, you're not dealing with VMs anymore now.
Ah, excellent. Nice.
So that was a good one.
So you just get like an endpoint then, and then you can kind of tell it like, hey, here's an image, use this.
Yep, you can do the Docker commands over the SSH, or just use the portal if you have to. And what else you like there? I thought this one on Project Springfield was interesting. Did you guys see that?
That's the artificial intelligence stuff, right?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of, it's a kind of a system from the Microsoft Research. You can upload your code, your project, application project, and it's going to create a bunch of test cases for it automatically and try to break the code, essentially.
Oh, that's the fuzzing. That's the fuzzing one. Oh, yeah.
Exactly. It creates like a fuzzing lab. And essentially, when it does break the code, it'll send you a report to see what broke, and you can go and fix it. So those are kind of a nice article about how they used ARM to be able to scale up and scale down, because obviously, you know, if you have complicated code, you're going to need more resources. It's fairly CPU-intensive process, right? Creating all these test cases and then testing each and every path in your application, that's not easy. So that's what it tried to do, and they discovered using ARM as opposed to classic the classic service manager, it kind of made this whole scaling up thing so much easier. All right, anything else, or should we just
I had one
Let
more
me
here. This
see.
AppSource, that's kind of interesting. This does the SaaS business apps in Azure.
Ah.
So we had a couple different models there. Anybody that's been paying attention in the marketplace, pretty close to this one. So there's like virtual machines and solution templates and these kind of things you could deploy out there in Azure, and that's the stuff in marketplace when you just search for stuff and deploy it. On top of that, we had VM extensions, which also allow basically a service type model that runs on top of a VM to do things. But then on top of that, we had another service that we were kind of previewing and trying for a while. There was a SaaS model called Developer Services, which basically was an extension of the resource provider model to partners. This is kind of an evolution of that. So AppSource is a different model to do that. That basically allows any of these third parties that have applications to be surfaced through Azure. So when you come into Azure and say, I actually need this component from this partner, or something that does billing for me, or something that does CRM or whatnot, you can search for those things. It'll get surfaced through Azure, and then it will basically like guide you through the process of onboarding. And it's an actual SaaS model, so the back ends are kind of hidden from the user as opposed to it being in your subscription.
Nice.
Excellent. Okay, so then I think there was one more thing about Document DB being available in more regions, but that's about it. Let's just move on to our special guest Matt Watson of Stackify. And Matt, thank you for taking the time to join us today. I believe you're based out of Kansas City, is that it, or somewhere nearby there?
That's right. Yeah, we're based out of Kansas City, and thanks a lot for having me today.
All right, great. So I'd appreciate if you could just give our listeners a little bit of background about your company and what it does, and then we can kind of gravitate towards how that works within the Azure space eventually.
Yeah. So, personally, my background, I've been a .NET developer for about, well, since 2002 or 2003 when .NET came out. Been a Microsoft developer forever, and when Azure came out, was definitely a big fan. And when I started Stackify, we kind of quickly adopted Azure. We've been on Azure for 4 or 5 years now, and so Stackify is actually one of Azure's largest customers in the Midwest. We have a quite a large deployment. So our customers are other software developers. So we have developers all over the world that use our software to help optimize and improve the performance of their applications. So we just do a whole lot of things around application monitoring and metrics and code level performance, errors and logs and all kinds of fun stuff for developers.
So Matt, this is Evan. So you actually not only you guys are providing this service to other devs, but you're actually running on Azure. I mean, what can you share about are you guys PaaS? Are you IaaS, SQL DB, SQL Server? I mean, obviously, don't give away anything super secret about your layout, but I mean, really kind of curious how you guys actually what services you took advantage to build your service.
Yeah, so when we first started out, back 4 or 5 years ago, that was before infrastructure as a service even existed.
Oh,
So
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
we started out, we were using nothing but cloud services and using web roles and worker roles. And so most of our code, most of our projects are still those today. We're starting to move a little bit of stuff to app services, and we're trying to convert our worker roles over to Service Fabric. So we're, some new projects we're doing a little differently too. But we also use a lot of infrastructure as a service. We have a large Elasticsearch cluster that we run. We use a huge amount of Azure Table Storage, Service Bus, SQL Server. We were one of the beta users for the Elastic Pools when they came out. Because every one of our clients has their own database, so we manage,
Oh,
hundreds of
yeah.
databases.
Yep.
So we got a few battle scars from, how do you deploy SQL schema updates to hundreds of databases and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, we use a little bit of everything, so we're always moving and changing around. But Azure's been great for us.
Now, one of the things Microsoft, when we develop software, we have this concept of dog fooding, right? We kind of make sure that the software works for us first. And so, when you guys built up some of your APM for Stackify, is that an approach that you took, to test it out yourself on Azure, to some of the features that the Stackify stack offers?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have our main, deployment, data center, part of our system, right, is hosted in Azure West. But then, we have our own, what we call Mission Control, which is our own version of Stackify that we deploy in a different region just to monitor our production version. So we absolutely use Stackify to monitor Stackify. We're one of our own largest clients. But yeah, we absolutely dog food, how do you support Azure App Services and Service Fabric and cloud services, and we do all kinds of stuff around monitoring, Azure Service Bus and Azure Storage, and we have special functionality for several different Azure things, because absolutely they're things that we need, and our customers need them. We have a lot of customers that use Azure, so.
So talk to us. So give us a feel for some of our listeners who may not be fully aware of what the Stackify software does. Let's assume that a developer is building a simple web application with some sort of a web service in the background, in the back end, and maybe a simple database, okay, some SQL database. How might what role would Stackify play to make the developer's life easier there?
Yeah, so let's say they have an Azure App Service. It's really easy to install our software. They can sign up in the Azure Marketplace. It's a Azure site extension that they install. Just takes a few minutes. They're up and running. And then our software kind of goes to work in the background. It's based on the .NET profiling and some of the other data collection that we can get from the Microsoft libraries, all that kind of stuff. And we just collect all that performance metrics about the developer's code and their applications. And then from our system, we give them all kinds of reporting that show, these are your requests, web services that are being used the most, which ones take the longest, what SQL queries are being used, what exact SQL queries take the longest. What's really neat about our software is it's designed to be just kind of plug and play. It works out of the box, and we automatically work with all the major frameworks. So, every Azure library, but also all the libraries for things like MongoDB and Elasticsearch and RavenDB and all the AWS libraries, all those things. So we can help the developers understand the performance of their application kind of by their stack. So, what percentage of time is spent in Redis versus, Azure Service Bus versus a web service calls, all those sorts of things. We do a very good job at the kind of code level performance and breaking down that kind of view, so you understand the key methods in their code and how long those methods take and if they're being called and how often they're being called, all that sort of stuff. And one of the really killer features that I always love is that we also track all of their errors in the logs from their code. So if they're using Log4Net or InLog or Serilog or one of those, that's all integrated very tightly on it too. So it's just amazing for debugging and tracking down performance issues. Developers use it, and even QA and DBAs, a lot of different people use it for all sorts of different reasons.
Man, where were you guys when I was still in developer support?
Absolutely, yeah.
I'd have said, and at the time, and I still am, was supporting Azure. I'd have said my Azure customers having performance issues to you.
One question I have is, so this for like a developer, is this thing? So I think there's probably like an agent in some cases, right? That maybe runs on the machine, and in some cases it's part of the service type. Does that is it like configurable? Like, is there like knobs and dials there to be like, I want like debug level stuff versus maybe a production server? You have it kind of lightweight turned on so it doesn't hit the server too hard.
Yeah, great question. So, by default, performance for us is kind of critical, critical thing, top of mind thing, right, at all times, right? We don't want to slow people's apps down. We don't want to cause a lot of CPU usage, a lot of memory usage, all that stuff. So our goal is to be very lightweight, and we don't add a lot of overhead. Our software is definitely very safe for production usage. Out of the box, we collect an amazing amount of data, more data than any other APM product that I've ever seen. All the way down to like every time you access Redis, we can tell you what key was accessed. All that kind of rich detail that's really, really powerful for debugging. We collect all of that. To our software, we have the profiler part, which runs in process, right? And profiling.NET is very complicated because you have to write it in C++, and how it interacts with the .NET runtime and all that stuff is really complicated to do. But it's also very fast, very efficient. And then we basically take all that data, and we have an agent that runs in the background. So that agent, that part of the background processing doesn't, interfere with your app. A lot of APM products actually run all in process and can slow your application down a lot. We're trying to avoid that at all costs. And to your point, we do have the ability to track like custom methods in your code and stuff like that. So people can do that. They can add that, and everything you track adds a little more overhead. But our users can track any single method they want in their code, and which a lot of APM products can do.
That's really cool.
Now, give us an idea for like specifically on the in the Azure world. You mentioned that you hooked into some of the Azure libraries and stuff like that, but like for example, DocumentDB or something like that. Do you go into that level as well?
Yeah, we track things like Azure Table Storage, Service Bus, DocumentDB, all those common libraries are supported. And so, like, if you log into our system, we can show you kind of like, let's say your application is real slow. We can you can quickly kind of see, okay, how much time is being spent in all those components to see, okay, wow, look, something's going on with Redis. Redis is slow. I can clearly see that's
Right.
the part of my stack that's the problem. And then, the other thing that's nice is we track over time to show you, okay, here's how often you write to Azure Table Storage and how many milliseconds that takes every time. And, see if you have performance problems from time to time that could be Azure related or could be something going on with your code you don't want, right? And,
Yeah.
we do a very good job of tracking like all those dependencies.
How about the end-to-end tracking? Is that something that it does too, like all the way from the, from the front end all the way to the back end database, for example? Is that part of the Stackify solution as well?
Good question. So we right now our system is very focused on the server side. We're getting ready to release all the client side stuff for JavaScript tracking. So are you guys aware that we have two products? We have our Retrace product, which is the APM side of it for the servers, and then we have a free product called Prefix. Are you guys familiar with Prefix? No.
No, please enlighten us.
So, Retrace is our, enterprise APM product. And basically what we did is we built a kind of mini version of it for developers to use on their workstation. So Prefix, developers install on their local PC, runs in the background, and basically as you're writing and testing code, it tracks all of the web requests, all the SQL queries, all of your logging statements, all of those things. And then you can pull them up at any time, and it gives you just kind of beautiful transaction tracing of each request. So are you guys familiar with Glimpse?
Yes.
So in some ways it's similar to Glimpse, but it's kind of Glimpse on steroids from the capabilities that it has. It just goes much deeper and doesn't require any code changes or config changes. You just literally install it, and like 1 minute later you're up and running, and it just kind of X-ray vision of all the things that it collects. And that's a free tool that we offer. We have over 10,000 developers that use that in like over 120 different countries. It's a really, really powerful tool.
And this is for web development, specifically, right? So if
Yes,
I'm
sir.
doing, you know, not that I guess WinForms. There's no whole. I guess there's still WinForms code being written these days. But if I'm doing client side code, does it apply in some scenarios there as well, or is it really strictly focused at, you know, web requests or web application scenarios?
So it's primarily focused on web applications. Earlier we were talking about the JavaScript and like end-to-end tracking.
Yep.
We're getting ready to release that in Prefix within the next couple weeks or so, right, beginning of the year. And it's going to do some really killer stuff to help people that are doing a lot of front-end work, a lot of single-page applications or Ajax-heavy applications, all that stuff. It's got some really powerful functionality for that. And then it also will work for Windows services or other types of background applications. It's not really designed for point-and-click kind of stuff, but it works perfectly for, say, a Windows service that's listening to Azure Service Bus and, you know, reading messages off a queue and kind of treating each one of those messages as their own transaction, you know, so you can kind of get an idea of, you know, when those transactions happen and how long they take and what they're doing. And it works perfectly for that. And it also, you can use it with, like, you know, Quartz as a job scheduler, tracking the jobs, or Hangfire or some other scenarios like that. It works great for those too.
Cool.
Now, if a customer were to run this, and they can't run it on premises as well, would it still send its data up to your Azure instance in the cloud? Is that where the final repository is?
For for Retrace, our APM product, yes. You know, it can be installed on any server. It doesn't matter if it's on Azure or AWS or just on premise, wherever. It doesn't matter. But it is only SaaS based, so all the data gets uploaded to us. We don't offer an on-premise version.
Right.
The customer servers can be anywhere, but the data all gets uploaded to us.
Okay. So a lot of this, I'm just contrasting this. Some of it sounds similar to what I say something like Application Insights would offer. How do you distinguish yourself from Application Insights?
Yeah, good question. So Application Insights collects a lot of great data. But most of its reporting is pretty simple, so it doesn't track a lot of dependencies. It doesn't support a lot of asynchronous code. We automatically support all async stuff in .NET, and we have much, much broader support of all the different types of dependencies and frameworks. So, like Azure, App Insights doesn't support Azure Service Bus, for example. We support just a way broader view of things.
Okay.
We also have the kind of code level views, which App Insights doesn't have at all. So you can, you know, really see what is my code doing and the order of things and how long each thing takes and the key methods and being able to view the errors and logs and all that together, that kind of tracing view. It doesn't do that at all. We also have much better reporting capabilities of applications across applications and across environments. App Insights doesn't really have the concept of, I have the exact same app, but I have it in three different environments, and how do I get reporting for that? It doesn't really do that.
Okay.
And reporting across applications in general, it doesn't do that. And it's very siloed by app. You create an app, and like you have an instrumentation key, and all the data goes into that app.
Right. It's mixed up.
Yeah, they don't. And then if you want multiple apps, you can't get reporting across them. So.
Right.
You know, and it's just a different user experience, all that stuff. We have very, very good support for tracking application errors and logs and even server logs, where some of that, a little bit of that functionality exists in App Insights, but then some of it is in OMS and in some of the OMS capabilities, which are separate. So, you know, we just have a kind of beautifully put together system, and it all works together. And we compete more with New Relic and AppDynamics and those types of companies.
Because you're hooking in at the profiler level, at least in the .NET space. How do you do that? I notice on your website you also support Java applications, and you know Azure is a fairly multi-platform system. So how do you work on the Java world?
Exactly the same. We have an agent that runs on Linux, and they just configure the Java JVM to use our profiler, and it all works the same way. Our system is profiler based, and App Insights is not. So like you can't go into App Insights and say, oh, I want to profile this method in my code. It doesn't do that. It only tracks SQL queries and web service calls and a couple other things. And it'll do that, and that's great. But if you want more, you have to modify your code and manually instrument all that stuff. It's a great basic tool. We just provide kind of a lot more advanced features.
So one question I had too, it seems like it's pretty easy to get started. Like the prefix tool is free, like the non-premium version. So it's pretty easy to start getting running with this, and then you can kind of ramp up to other models. Is it like charge per server that I'm monitoring, or just from a high level like pricing standpoint, how does it get billed?
Yeah, so Retrace, our APM solution, for non-production usage starts at $10 a month per server. And then for production usage, it's either $25 or $50 a month, depending on if it's a single core server or multiple core server.
So per
And we're in
server,
the
you mean?
Azure, yeah, it's all per server. And we're in the Azure Marketplace, so we have a free trial in the Azure Marketplace. And then, people can use their EA credits, all that stuff, and buy our software as well through Azure. So.
That's cool.
So I gotta ask, what's the one thing that, as you guys were kind of building in Azure that you really kind of kick yourself for going down a bad path that you kind of wish you had known ahead of time, or you think other people should know that, just to make sure they don't make the same mistake? Anything kind of stick out in your mind?
It's a good question. One of the things that has forever frustrated me is Azure cloud services in general, the web roles and the worker roles, because they take forever to deploy.
They do.
They are ridiculous. So in this day and age, I think I would avoid them at all costs unless there's a real reason to use them. I would use, app services or use Service Fabric probably. Instead, Azure, app services is so much nicer to deploy to, and you have staging slots, so you can deploy to a staging slot, and you don't have to pay anything extra for it. Where with the cloud services and web roles, you have to pay for the staging slot, and people always forget to delete the deployment, so it sits out there, and you pay all this extra money for the staging slot. And that's been one of my biggest frustrations with the cloud services, and yeah, we've used a little bit of everything. Probably one of the weirdest things we do is we actually use Azure Table Storage as a queue. We built our own queuing kind of mechanism all around Azure Table Storage.
And why is that?
Because,
What's wrong with the Azure queue?
yeah, I was gonna say, what drove you to write your own?
well, so we ingest a lot of data, and a lot of that data could be an error or log messages, profile traces, all this stuff. And those messages are too large to fit in Azure Service Bus. They're over the max message size.
I
So
see.
we take that data and package it up and basically compress it and store it in Azure Table Storage, and it works as a queue for us. Works really well. So we could queue, gigabytes of data very rapidly to table storage and then, dequeue that on the other side.
I suppose
Yeah, I mean
that's a good reason.
I mean yeah, I was gonna say, I mean that's the thing about the we've talked about this before, guys, on about some of the Azure services. They provide some really core functionality that a lot of people need and use, but if you have a very specialized solution, sometimes it doesn't make sense to leverage those, right? It makes more sense to kind of build your own up from the ground up, like Matt did, right? It's not that you can, it's just that you shouldn't do that by default, right? You should do it only because it makes sense, versus just always writing from scratch, which is what we used to do, right, in the on-premises world.
Yeah, and I'm sure in
And I
Matt's
think
case,
at one time,
I was going to say, Matt probably ran Stackify against his code and figured out, oh, there's a bottleneck here. I need to rewrite this.
yes, absolutely. We were using Azure Service Bus and pumping a lot of data through it, and we then Event Hubs came out, I believe, and we were actually in Seattle. In Redmond, meeting with the team there about service, about kind of our unique case, and they were describing this whole thing with Event Hubs and what it did, and like kind of exactly like what we did with table storage, but the problem even with like Event Hub for us is it isn't really designed for multi-tenant. So if you've got, you know, if you're like us, when you got 1,000 clients of data coming in, we need to queue those kind of in 1,000 different buckets. Where if you pumped all of those into like one queue or one Event Hub, you know, then they all line up behind each other, right? Where we need to scale out, and each client kind of have their own bucket of data. And so it's just, yeah, it comes down to your unique challenge of what you're trying to do. Sometimes is a little different, a little weird.
True. That's definitely a good insight there. Thank you. All right, Matt, this has been really great talking to you, and thanks for sharing your insights about how you used Azure, how you allow developers to find issues in Azure, and good background in your product as well. So thank you for all that. And guys, any more questions for Matt before we let him go?
No, this is great. Thanks for coming on, Matt. It's good to hear both, you know, kind of the product itself, mm-hmm. as well as how you guys, you know, did it on Azure and knowing that you're sitting there running there.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot, guys, for having me on today.
Great. Right then, guys.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.